Oh, it's because we're late. Well, good day, boys and girls. How's everybody out there in the world? We've been having all kinds of discussions about different things. We're going to get into some of that a little bit, and it actually does sort of kind of pertain to fishing. But Robert continues his fascination with tarpon holes. We're not sure what that's about, but there is tarpon holes on my page again.
It's just it's like the physicals. The tarpon's physical hole, or is it the thing in the ground?
I haven't been able to figure this out. It just Robert keeps talking about tarpon holes.
Okay.
So there's holes in tarpon or holes in the tarpon or something, but there's an obsession there. Redfish, black drum, snapper, we got all kinds of stuff going on with permit, yellowtail, mangroves, ladyfish. There's a lot of different stuff, but we were talking about, we have visitations with my big boat. And once a week, you know, we go down and we get
glad
visiting,
you spent the money on that so you go visit it once in a while.
Yeah, I get to go down and visit it, you know, pet it and, you know, let it know, yes, we still love you, just, you know. They did get the generator for it, though, and the metal showed up.
Oh, cool.
So there is metal to start putting the motor brackets and stuff together. So
nice.
I don't know what's going to happen with all that. Hopefully something happens pretty soon. But we finally got, you know, we have the outboards, we got the fly-by-wire controls, the generator, all this stuff. So now they just got to start putting it all together. So all the rest of stuff's tore out of it. So, you know, kind of interesting watching the progression, but, you know, nothing's going easy. I've spent 8 hours at least this week on the phone and the computers, and it's amazing. You get all these companies, and you say, okay, I'm going to need this. Okay, okay, okay. And by the time you get done, they said, well, we don't. All we've got right now is this and this. The rest of this, you know, we should have fairly soon. And basically, they've got 1% of what you want, 10% if you're lucky. And maybe they'll ship it to you. Maybe they won't. It's been unbelievable. And so that's why I'm not mad at the guy waiting 6.5 months to get a generator.
Right.
All because of some sensors.
Yeah.
But here's something about where you're going to fish. I had a guy come in today, and he's going to go trolling. And he's telling me, okay, I want to do the trolling, and I want to catch mahi and this and that. I'm thinking to myself, all right. And there was something different about the way he was telling me but not explaining it to me. Usually when guys are going to go trolling, they tell me what boat they have and, you know, all this stuff. And this guy just says, I'm the world's worst fisherman, and I want to do some trolling. Finally, ding, 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 the light. My head goes off and goes, you have a sailboat, don't you? Yeah.
How'd you figure that?
Because he was so embarrassed about talking with it.
Okay.
Sailboaters know they're kind of embarrassing. You know, I've owned sailboats. I've had, it's like people come in and say, well, I got a pontoon boat. So I'm like, wait a minute. I own a pontoon boat. I'm sorry if you're embarrassed, but I happen to like them. I've owned pontoon boats for what? 15 years now, Robert?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I've almost always got a pontoon boat around. They're comfortable. They're nice. They go shallow. Yeah. There's a lot of great things about a pontoon boat. There's some really bad things about pontoon boats.
Sure.
But every boat has good and bad about it.
Right.
You know?
I think they have more pros than they do have cons when it comes to fishing.
I actually, yeah, unless you're going to try and work shorelines.
Right.
If you're going and you're, I'm going to go here and anchor up and fish, or I'm going to drift and fish, pontoon boat's awesome. But the only thing 99% of the people do wrong, they have a pontoon boat. They always drop the anchor off the front. Now you're sitting there fishing with the anchor right there. Why would you do that? You have this beautiful front deck to fish off of. I put my anchor out the back of the pontoon boat. It really, unless it's really, really choppy, it doesn't know the difference.
No, not at all.
And that way I have all that clear, empty space in the front to fish out of. I don't have to deal with the anchor line. It's 24 feet behind me.
Right.
You know, I very seldom, if ever, get a fish tangled up in it. But if you anchor off the front, probably every third or fourth fish, you got to unwrap it from the anchor line.
Yeah.
Put the anchor out the back. I do that in all my boats, believe it or not, boys and girls. You just have to watch how big the waves are. If it's choppy, you need to anchor off the front so the bow catches the waves. But if it's pretty calm and nice, anchor off the back.
Right.
My gosh. Why have all that in your way? Makes no sense.
No, not at all.
So this guy's telling me he wants to go trolling. Figured out he's got a sailboat. Nice boat. But he's got one rod he wants to pull. Now, the problem you have with sailboats is they're not consistent on speed. The wind blows a little harder, a little not as hard. You catch waves and it starts and stops. The sailboats don't maintain, unless you've got a pretty strong wind, they're not consistent on speed. And if you tack to go up into the, you know, to get in a different position or something, you don't want anything that's going to sink. Because let's say you got 50, 60 feet of line out the back, and you're in 30 feet of water. Lure goes down, snags something on the bottom. Now you lost your lure and all your line.
Yeah.
It's just going to drag it all out once you snag on the bottom.
Absolutely.
Or it's going to break the rod or the rod holder or something's got to give. The line, whatever. But, so when I'm rigging somebody up to go on a sailboat, normally I would just use a very small lure, like an 08 Rapala or Yozuri, the small crystal minnow, or the 3D fingerling. Those would be three good examples. But the problem with them is they're hard to keep in the water, so you got to put a lot of line out. And that creates its own set of problems, because the lips on them are not big enough to grab the water and take the lure under it, especially if you tie a knot in your leader and attach that. So I use small steel leaders from the lure up to like 60 or 80 pound monofilament. Now, with 10 to 12 inches of small steel leader, the steel leader, I use a dual lock snap on it, and that keeps the water able to hit the front of the lure and let the lip go down into the water and make it swim properly, makes it grab the water. The 60 pound test is for my fingers. Think of it as a handle. I'm tying about 2 to 3 feet of, I got 8 to 12 inches of steel leader. Then I've got 2 to 3 feet of 60 pound mono. Now, what that's for is, let's say you get a 20-pound tuna on this little lure. Very likely to happen. A bonita, maybe a big mahi. I don't want to grab the line, especially thin braided line, with my fingers. So that 60-pound test is there as a handle, so I can grab the line and pull the fish up into the boat.
No, that makes perfect sense. I mean, that's
what
it should
be. You get what I mean?
Yep.
So, but if you tie that directly to that little tiny lure, the knot is so big, the lure will never go down in the water. It acts as a cover for the front of the lure.
Right.
So it won't work. It won't have any action. So if you put a little bit of steel after that, and I'm only doing, let's say I got 40-pound line. I only need 40-pound steel.
Yeah.
I don't need 100-pound steel. I mean, what's the sense? If you got 20-pound test line, you need 20-pound test steel. It's just for them not to chew through it. And most fish cannot chew through steel.
Not very easily.
It's pretty tough.
Yeah.
Except if you get a decent-sized shark.
Right.
Maybe a king or something like that might every once in a while nip through it. They get a little upset, catch it just right. Yeah, they can fray it anyway.
Yeah, it has to be just right in their teeth.
Yeah, otherwise they break their teeth. Mm-hmm. So, but what I did was take a floating diving lure, which Rapala has some in the, I can't remember the name of it. But you can't use the balsa ones. They got to be X-Rap because they hold together. If it's a balsa lure, it's going to pull it apart. You get a big fish on it, it's going to rip it in half because off of the back eye of the lure, I run about 2 to 3 feet, and then I put an aught squid spoon back there, that little tiny squid spoon, which you're going to get 99% of your fish are going to hit on that little spoon. It's the same size as a glass minnow, an anchovy. It's a very enticing target from fish from a half a pound to, say, 40 pounds. Yeah. And I've got the spoons back literally with holes in them, crushed, beat. I mean, unbelievably mangled this spoon because the fish was so big, he literally just crushed it. And one actually with a tooth poke a hole in the metal. It's not a heavy gauge metal at all. It's very thin, you know. But that little spoon dancing behind a floating diving lure, especially for a sailboat. Now, what I'm doing is if the boat should stop, the lure floats to the top because of the extra weight of the steel leader. I usually use 40 to 60 pound steel leader on it. I use the plastic coated. I weld the ends of it. I don't use crimps. I don't tie knots. I just weld each end of it. If you stop by the store, I'll teach you how to do it. But with the weight, little bit of weight of that spoon, the steel leader and stuff, the lure floats very slowly back up to the top. So if you're in a boat and it stops, it starts floating very slowly up towards the surface. When you go to take off, it goes along again, no problem. But it eliminates a lot of the snagging, tangling. Because even if you're in 800 feet of water, you don't know what's in the water to get snagged up on.
No.
So
anything.
But everything I was telling him was opposite, completely opposite from the normal way of doing stuff. Except it works.
Oh, it's proven itself time and time and time again.
Now, you could apply that to other boats. I mean, if you scaled it down, that might be the way to troll with your kayak. Because one of the biggest problems with trolling with the kayak is you snag stuff on the bottom.
The only thing that I use trolling behind a kayak, because exactly as you said, what you want to use is a wake bait, W-A-K-E. Bait. It's a lure that only goes surface to 6 inches down. These wake baits or surface minnows, Yozuri's got a surface minnow, other people call them wake baits, but they stay almost at the surface, maybe within a few inches down. As you're paddling your kayak across the flat, you're getting all this lure back there that is not going to snag up, might catch a weed or something, but it'd have to be a floating one. So if you're in more than 8 inches of water, you can pull that lure, catch fish, have a great time, and not worry about it. So what you're saying is absolutely true, but I got to use a different lure for that.
Yeah, I see that. Like I said, you got to scale it down and deal with it differently, but the concept is the same. You got a lure that's not going to head to the bottom, either because it's being pulled at speed or because on its own weight, it's a sinking lure.
So what I'm doing, though, is I'm taking what's pulling the lure. And if you got a big powerboat with outriggers and all this other stuff, a Hatteras or something, and you've got all these, your lure options are off the charts. I mean, you can just have so many different things you can do. Once the motor's on the boat, your speed is consistent. You can work around all the stuff. But when you're in a kayak, you can't. When you're in a sailboat, you don't have that option either. And you can't stop in a sailboat. That's the number one thing about sailboats. You can't stop when you're trolling, which is a big thing. When you're in a powerboat, you simply pull the throttles back to neutral, no problem. In a kayak, you stop paddling. But in a sailboat, if you got the main up, yeah, good luck. It's going to take you a long time to get that boat to slow down, even if you pull the lines and let them luff in the wind, you know. So it's every boat you're pulling with is a different experience when it comes to trolling. And the, God, I don't know how to say this without sounding unbelievably egotistical, but.
Let's give it a shot.
Well, the thing is, there's almost nobody outside of myself, Robert, a couple other ones, that actually understand what you're pulling the lures with is the difference in what you can pull. And what size you pull determines how many fish you get. How big of a lure you're pulling determines the size of the fish, but it also reduces the numbers of the fish.
Right.
You know, there's all these factors that come about. We go out to, when we go down to see the boat, we stop and try and get a different restaurant every week. And whether you're going to a store or restaurant, there's always three things. Bad service, mm-hmm. bad food, whatever. Good service, good food. We went to a place called Texas Tony's. I think it's a small chain. Had a burger with like chili and macaroni and cheese. I really wanted to go back there again. I'm really looking forward to it. Hoping it's going to be as good the second time as the first time. Burt's, Captain Con's, what's that? The Ragged Ass Saloon. They had, we've eaten there several times. And then you get into the places where, if I go into some place and it's not that good, usually I will give them a second chance. If you go into a store and the people are kind of grouchy and everything, you know, but it's a decent, clean store, you always go back again. I've had people come into our store, caught me in a bad day, came back in and go, oh, boy, glad I got you this time because last time you were a real jerk, you know. But they gave me a second chance and came back. And I usually do that with some places. But there's also that middle option. We were out and we stopped at a nice little restaurant in a little mall. And the food was decent. But you could tell it was as good as they were going to make because they had put all the stuff on it. They'd done everything and it was right. But it just didn't seem like you were getting your money's worth. And the flavors were good, but it wasn't spectacular. And it wasn't a place where I'd say, no, I'm never going back there. But it's not high on your list for a return trip. And when you're thinking about places to go fishing, it's like I've had people go out fish tarpon in the holes in the harbor, in the middle holes.
Mm-hmm.
You got the middle hole, the 20-foot hole, and the Pirate Harbor hole. Well, these areas in the harbor are historically where tarpon may congregate more often. But it doesn't mean they're good every time. So if you go there and it's not good, you're going to have to go back and try it again. If you go there and it's great, well, obviously you're going to go back. But most of the time, it's pretty fair. It's not like I wouldn't say that's the best place to go tarpon fishing, but it's one on a list you have to check.
Yeah.
It didn't work out the analogy the way I hoped it would, but the whole point of this is I've had people go out there and say, well, I went out there and fished all day, never got a bite. I'm not fishing there anymore.
Well, you get guys that do the same thing where they look at the numbers for a spot offshore. I went there and I didn't catch anything, you know, and it's like, well, why didn't I catch anything? Well, I'm just never going to fish there again because I've been there and that's it. They don't realize that, number one, fish don't have anchors. Number two, might be only a wintertime spot. Might be a spot that's only good on.
Shocking how many people fish and have been coming down here for years or fishing here actually regularly for years that don't understand. At this time of year, the fish move out deeper, 90, 100 feet of water. Right. You'll be lucky to catch good fish in 60.
Right.
It got warm. The water got warm. They want to move out to where the water's cooler. Deeper is usually cooler.
Right.
But as the water cools off in the winter, especially in those January, February, March months, they're all coming right up by shore. Could happen as early as October, November, but usually it takes about a month or two for the water to actually chill off.
Right.
If it gets really cold in October, it's going to take till November for those fish to move in. Because the water gets warmer down deeper very slowly, and also gets cooler as you go down deeper very slowly.
Right.
But the cooler the water is, the closer they come to shore. So you've got usually about four months out of the year where you can go out in 30 feet of water and catch really nice sized fish. Then it's going to go to 40, then 50, then 60, then 80, then 90.
Yeah.
And then it will come back the same way. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's kind of like the same thing inshore fishing. It's like, you know, I'm never going to go fish the West Wall again for redfish and snook. I didn't catch anything over there. Well,
I've been there twice last month.
Right.
Well, what was the difference between when you were there and today? Did the weather get cooler? Did it get hotter? Was it raining? Is it still raining? Is the rain stopped? Something had to happen environmentally. The temperature, the rain, the
moon
salinity.
Phase.
What? The moon phase. The tide. Something had to change in order for that spot to have fish that didn't have spot. You can call Josh back.
No, he's just asking about tonight for Luigi's.
Oh. Oh, you got the fishing club meeting tonight at Luigi's.
Yep.
So if you're out there listening, do you guys have any open seats?
No, it's full.
You're all booked?
Yeah.
So never mind. He's not doing the club meeting. It doesn't happen tonight. They're fully booked already.
Unfortunately.
Well, there's only 50 seats. So once you have reservations for 50, we used to do it where you just show up, but people get mad because they drive from Northport down and they wouldn't get a seat. They didn't mind the first time, but a second or third time, you would think they would come earlier, but no, they still get upset.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny how that works.
Well, you know,
as it gets busier, we'll do a second night.
That we were talking about going different times, different conditions. If you fish up north, you're really in tune to what's going on seasonally. Sometimes what's going on when you get spells of rain and then you go fishing afterwards. I mean, there's a whole different mindset. And then they come down and they don't apply that information because everything looks the same when you get to Florida. It looks like it's the same time of year all year long. Where in New England and places like that, in Michigan, the seasons change. And when the seasons change, you change your techniques for fishing.
And we were just talking about that the closer you are to the equator, the less variant in temperature you have. So you have less temperature variant in Port Charlotte than you do in Gainesville. You have less temperature variant in Key West than you do in Port Charlotte. Every couple hundred miles north you get, it gets hotter in the summer and colder in the winter. So we go from about 28 to 92. Very seldom we get over 92 degrees. And very seldom we'll ever get below 28. Those are kind of, say, 92 to 94 or 28 to 94 is our extremist. Usually we're in that 35 to 90 degree. We don't get above 90 that many days of the year.
No.
But you get up around Alabama and Georgia, they go 110, 112 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And they go down to 20 degrees in the winter.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to live up there.
But, I mean, that's the way it works, right?
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah.
People forget. When you're talking about weather, you have to include the equator in what you're thinking of. The further north you get, the more variant in temperature. If you're on the equator itself, 10 to 20 degree difference all year long. I know in Costa Rica, it only changes 20 degrees. It's usually 80 in the summer and 60 in the winter. Averages 70 degrees.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah,
don't get below 60 or above 80.
Pretty much, like in San Jose especially, it's actually only about 15 degrees year-round.
Yeah.
It's like 80 to 82 during the daytime and 68 to 69 at night. That's pretty much all year long there.
Yeah, it doesn't change much.
Mm-mm.
But here in Port Charlotte, we have more of a temperature swing than they do, but less than Georgia now.
Right.
And when you're dealing with fishing, being aware of the subtle differences. Is it raining all the time? Is there a lot of fresh water? Is the water dark brown? Is it crystal clear? I actually think the fishing's easier. Like right now, there's a whole bunch of redfish out around Bull Bay, north end of Pine Island, Turtle Bay, a little bit starting to show up over by Bernstorr.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's easier when water's dark.
Oh, absolutely.
I think the fishing is so much easier if you've got, you know, a lot of murky water. When it's gin clear water, man, that's tough fishing.
I'll agree with that. I mean, those fish are overly hypersensitive when that water's clear. You know, it's unbelievable because...
Well, when the water's clear, they have much greater danger of predators from above because they can be seen. You know, they can also see you, but their biggest problem is you can see them. And so can the ospreys and anything else that preys on fish from above. And so they get really wary to anything that's on the surface. So the shadow of your boat, your arms moving, you know, to cast, that whole bit. When the water's clear, you got to cast way off from the boat. You can't pull up close like you used to when the water's dark. So, and that's the big problem, is the fish are now very aware that they're exposed to predators.
You know, and it's funny because I would much rather go out fishing when the water's gin clear and everything's beautiful and it's just so nice to be there. But the fact of the matter is you usually catch a lot less fish than right now. The water's all murky, and I literally have to idle the boat up, figure out where the drop-off is, turn around and come back out, and it'll take me an extra half an hour. But once I figured out where it is and I can cast to that drop-off, I'm going to catch a lot more fish because they don't know I'm there.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as it's gin clear, I don't have to go up. I can see the drop-off. From basically Cape Hayes over to the outside of Turtle Bay, which is there by Devilfish Key. All along that outside, in many areas, you're going to see white sandy beaches. And then you're going to see, when the water's really clear, from the white sand beach, a sand that comes out, and then it drops. Actually, a significant drop, a foot, 2 foot drop off. And then the bottom starts again. Well, it's kind of like when you're swimming. You know, you walk out so far and then you get that drop. Well, that's the same thing that happens there. And those redfish and snook hang right along that edge. And once you see it, you're not going to notice it if you're just kind of casually looking. But if you take your boat and go very slowly when the water's clear, idle up to it, looking in the water, not at the birds and the sky and the manatees and all this, but actually looking at the bottom feature, you're going to see that ledge. And then you look left and right and you go, oh my God, this thing goes on all the way around the end. And then you start looking, you're seeing fish coming at you, going away from you. But now you go back there when the water's murky, and if you know where it is in your mind, you know, you anchor your boat up, you start fishing it, and you can be fishing 15, 20 feet from the boat, catching all the fish you want. But when it's clear, you're back 60, 80 feet.
Yeah.
To be able to catch those same fish.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I just told you where I fish these schools of redfish and what I'm looking for and how I'm finding them. People say, well, you never tell me what to do. You might actually have to pay attention. So, you okay, RJ?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Okay. I didn't know if you were getting ready to go somewhere or if your back was bothering
you. My back's bothering me.
Gotcha. I've been going, you know, mine's actually been pretty good the last week.
Yep.
I don't know what happened.
I'm still recovering from building those horse stalls.
Oh, my God. I forgot about that. Yeah, you're going to be a few more weeks. Black Drum. They were in big schools in the middle of the harbor. Then the schools, for the first time that I've ever heard of, were going through the Port Charlotte canals and even up into PGI. PGI is loaded with big black drum. That's the best place to fish big black drum. But not huge schools going through feeding. You've got smaller schools.
Yeah.
But it's been amazing. Where are the black drum now?
Well, PGI definitely the most consistent place, but they're not in those bigger groups either over there. It's like 1 to 10 fish, it seems like, per little group coming through. And most of those fish are actually cruising the perimeters of the seawalls. You know, if you get to right where that just barely starts to drop off of the oysters, that seems to be where they're hanging. With the exception of, I don't even know what to call it, but you know, when you go straight into Ponce and straight down the main channel, not along the rim canal, but towards through all
go
the houses.
And then you go in that big lake in the middle.
Yeah, yeah, it opens up, and that's what I've always called it. It's basically a lake. It's just where a bunch of the canals meet together. Some of those fish are flat out just hanging on the surface out in the middle of that lake.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, you're actually seeing it. You got to watch real close because the water is dark, but you're seeing little subtle dimples in the water where they're just swimming just barely under the surface, and they're, you know, 30 to 50-pound fish, so it's like just a subtle swipe of their tail leaves a little eddy on the water or a little swirl or current. You know, so if you watch for those on the surface, even, you know, what, heck, 150 feet away from the nearest seawall, those fish are there.
Recreational fishermen, which are now as bad as the commercial fishermen used to be, because every time something moves, they're throwing cast nets at it.
Yeah.
PGI has a law. You're not allowed to throw a cast net, period. And the fines are fairly excessive. So you get fish that are hanging out on the surface and other places like that. Even though people hook and line in there, there are no netting. Recreational, commercial, nobody throws a net in PGI. So you do get more fish just kind of going back there to hang out. Because they can still commercial fish in Port Charlotte canals with a cast net or anything. You know, everybody's getting so nuts nowadays. Everybody hates everybody.
You think?
I was talking
to I don't like you guys either.
And he hates people who won't get a COVID vaccination. And I'm like, why would you hate them? I said, you know, what happened to you do what you want to do, I'll do what I want to do. I mean, unless they're showing symptoms, they're not doing anything to you. And people have gotten confused about everything. We're not supposed to hate somebody because they disagree. You might look at them and go, well, that's a stupid person. Mm-hmm. I do that all the time. I look at people and go, okay, that one's dumber than the bags the rock come in. But why would I hate them over having a disagreement? I might be afraid of them or whatever, but, you know, because, you know, let's admit it the way it is, stupid scares.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't get it all. Get a vaccine, don't get a vaccine. If you feel sick, wear a mask.
Or stay home.
Stay home. If you have to go out, have the mask on. If you feel good, I don't care if you have a mask on. Because, and by the way, it's not helping you. It's probably making you sick. Masks don't work all day. They're just never designed for that. Cloth masks are stupid. But while the mask, if it makes you feel better, wear a mask. But the people who should wear a mask are, do you have cold symptoms? Do you have the flu? Whether it's COVID or not, just a simple cold. Don't give it to me. It's not fair. If you're sick, keep your darn mask on. Preferably stay home. Other than that, I don't care what you do. Really don't.
Can we go back to black drum for a minute?
Black drum, I'd like to switch to ladyfish because they're more fun right now because there's some big schools starting to gather up.
Yeah. Yes, there is.
But I had a black drum question.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead. Let's go to black drum.
Can you eat black drum, when and how?
In the summertime, they might have some more parasites in them. And the parasite, for all the world, looked like kind of a giant sperm, I guess. Big, round, white head and long, squiggly little tail on it. Mm-hmm. But you've probably eaten thousands of them. If you eat fish in restaurants, especially grouper and stuff, you've probably had many of them and just never noticed. They're not harmful to humans in any way. Just if you see them, it's pretty disgusting. I don't want to eat that.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it's no big deal. It's like a lot of stuff. I don't want to know where my food comes from. I don't want to know anything about this. But they seem to get this parasite in the back end of them around the tail. And it seems to be less in the winter than it is in the summer.
I think it goes into a slightly dormant stage. I think they're still there. They just actually shrink up a little bit and get more dormant.
Yeah, but...
Because it's a spaghetti. It's the spaghetti worm.
See, it makes it sound better. Spaghetti worm.
Spaghetti worm, yeah. That's pretty tasty.
Yeah. So...
And it won't hurt you. Even if you ate the fish raw with that worm in it, it won't hurt you. Because our digestive system actually kills it.
But this is a weird little parasite because its whole goal is to get into a shark.
Yeah. It's exactly what it's for.
So...
It's hoping a shark will eat its buddy that it's living in.
Right. It's hoping the shark's going to eat the drum so it can get into the shark so it can grow and replicate, right?
Right.
Because it can't replicate in the black drum.
Right.
So it hangs out in a fish, which would include black drum, sea trout, red grouper.
Red grouper, definitely.
Red grouper. So black drum, sea trout, red grouper, sail cats, anything else? I know there's some other fish. I just can't think of them.
Yeah, I can't either.
But out of all the fish, those are the main ones. Red grouper, black drum, not red drum, but black drum. That's a weird one. Redfish and black drum are genetically close enough they can breed together, but this spaghetti worm only goes to the black drum, not the red drum.
Not with any consistency. It will sometimes go into a redfish, but very, very, very seldom. And I think it's because they're more pelagic and open water fish and don't sit still for very long periods of time.
Maybe, yeah. So, and sea trout are susceptible to them too. Mm-hmm. But very rare, if almost never, will you see them in a silver trout, almost always in the spotted trout. So true. They seem to, you know, be pretty particular as to which fish they go into. But the whole idea is to get inside this fish and wait till it gets eaten by a shark.
Right.
This is...
That's an amazing survival technique.
It's a weird life cycle.
I mean, I don't care. Whoever your supreme deity is, whoever you want to thank, started and created the world. I mean, let's say there's multiple guess on who that is. And, you know, your God, the God. This is one weird deity. When you can think of, he's sitting around there, he's got 6 days to create the earth, right? How do you come up with, a creature that lives in a shark, can replicate in the shark, then goes through the shark's excrement, right?
Yep.
And has that excrement eaten by another fish or by some type of fish which gets eaten by another fish or crustacean or whatever it is that eats the poop of the shark. Whatever creature eats that, then another fish eats that, and then they grow up in that fish waiting to be eaten by a shark before they can make babies. This is a deity with time on his hands.
Exactly right. Those days are a lot longer than you figured.
This is a guy who, or a girl, or a whatever the deity is, who had a lot of time. Now, I'm going to let these two get together, have some fun, and I'm going to make that fun so they want to do it and make lots of babies. And, okay, the guy, boy, girl gets together, and they do that, and then all of a sudden, here's the baby. It grows up, does the same thing. But that's boring. So I'm going to make one that lives in this, gets pooped out, eaten by that, waits for something else to come along and eats that, grow up in that, waiting to be eaten so I can get back to where I can replicate?
Wow.
Come on. All right. Ladyfish. What's going on with ladyfish?
They're starting to school up a little bit.
Oh, I eat drum all year.
Okay.
The smaller, my favorite size, and because if I'm having a bunch of friends over, I'll get a big one. And I stake them up in the steaks, cut the worms out when I see them, but I'll get a big drum because they actually are very good to eat. Big, flaky meat, amazing stuff. But in that 24-inch, especially in the colder weather, very seldom you see parasites in them. And it's enough meat or even more than enough for two people with one of those 24-inch black drum. that's a real good size for a meal.
Right.
And very seldom do you have the parasites in them, no spaghetti worms. Every once in a while you might find one. Cut it out, throw it away. If you're not a millennial, you grew up when you picked up an apple, and if it was a worm in it, you cut that part out and ate the rest of the apple. We didn't go, oh, there's a worm in this, and throw the whole apple away.
As a Frank, what's the worst thing, what's worse than finding a worm in an apple?
Half a worm.
Half a worm, yep.
I grew up that.
Yep, uh-huh.
Yes. All right, ladyfish, getting back into that. I love eating black drum. Eat them whenever you want.
The East Wall has had some schooling up ladyfish. And then the inside the bar on the West Wall, and then a little bit around Hoare Point, Mangrove Point, they've been all kind of starting to school up in all those various spots. And this is a time of year when not only can you have a field day catching them just for fun, but they're an amazing bait for several fish. You know, the tarpon have really started to turn on to them a little bit more this past week, and that's because some of the sharks have thinned out a little bit. Same way with the catfish. They're still there, but not as prevalent as they were 10 days ago. But the other thing is they make great bait for these big redfish schools that have been starting to show up. You know, redfish are pretty aggressive, but because it is so blooming hot, having cut bait this time of year is amazing, and having some of your fresh cut bait makes it just a little bit more enticing. You know, you taught me years ago.
Ladyfish versus frozen, it's always going to be better. Fresh blue crabs versus frozen. You mm-hmm. know what the best one for you to use? The one you can get.
Right. Well, you taught me that years ago. You always take frozen bait for your fresh bait insurance.
Yeah.
You know, I don't care what kind of bait it is or species I'm after. I'm always going to take some frozen bait with me to hopefully guarantee my fresh bait. The ladyfish are being caught on everything. I think my favorite lure to throw at them is, you know, like that zero or double zero squid spoon is a good one just to cast, because you don't have to cast very far. Yeah, but even then, sometimes they're schooled up so close you don't need to cast very far.
Yeah, well, you're only going to throw that zero squid spoon. If you get real light braid, you might get 15 feet out of it.
Right. But mostly I throw a lot of those little pompano jigs, the banana jigs. Real popular because you can cast that thing a mile away.
For me, if I'm looking for them for bait and I have a live well running, I'm going to the VMC hot skirt jigs.
Mm-hmm.
Hook them, reel them in, lift them up, get them over to live well, and they'll shake themselves off and fall in the live well.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
As long as you got pressure on them, they're going to stay on the hook. But as soon as you get up to the boat, just lift it over the boat, they'll drop right in. Or over to live well, they'll fall right in.
Yeah.
The VMC hot skirt, number one best way to get bait ladyfish in the boat.
Yeah.
And pick your colors.
Yeah. No, it doesn't really matter. You know, I've even had some phenomenal success with just a plain old bare jig head. You know, people flip out on that. They're like, what do you mean? It's like, they just throw a plain jig head at them when they're schooled up like that feeding.
And speaking of absolutes, this or that or the next thing, I was talking to a guy, and he said, red tide only eats sawdust algae. It doesn't eat any of the nitrates or anything, only the sawdust algae. And the sawdust algae is basically feeds and becomes prevalent when there's iron in the water, and the only way that happens is from the Saharan dust. And I said, but red tide isn't a true plant or animal. It's one of that weird, I don't really know what you call the species. Do you remember what that is,
Robert? No, I don't remember what it's called off the top of my head.
But you know what I'm talking
plant
about.
Plant animal, yeah.
It's not really a true plant.
No. It's also not a true animal. The only difference with it is it's got a little tail on it, so it can actually move itself around. That makes it unique against any other algaes out there.
So here you have an algae that's not really an algae. But this guy's saying the only thing it eats is the sawdust algae. And that's the reason the red tide gets bad. And the only reason the sawdust algae gets bad is because of the Saharan dust that drops the iron into the water. He said, but it has nothing to do with nitrates or any of that. None of that matters. I'm sitting there looking at him going, well, I believe that you believe the guy that told me. Well, he told me, and he's this and he's that. I said, I believe he believes that. I said, but we have seen too many different things over the years, and I know many different things about it, that it's part of the truth, I'm sure, because I know Red Tide likes to eat that sawdust algae. But the whole thing about it is, this absolute stuff is crazy. You said, well, you can sprinkle this aluminum something something on it, and it kills all the red tide. But they had to stop that. I said, why? Because I know Moat would never give them a permit to test it.
Right.
He said, well, they didn't have a permit. They were just doing it. And they had to stop because they were afraid if they killed all the red tide, what environmental effect would that have? Because if you take something out of the system, something else could probably take its place.
Mm-hmm.
That could be worse. Black tide's worse. I forget what you call that stuff.
Oh, yeah. It's a black diatom algae.
Yeah. And that stuff's worse than red tide.
Yeah. Big time.
That's total death.
Yeah.
Red tide kills, but not everything all over.
No,
up
that
and
black
down.
Diatom algae grows at such an alarming rate and breaks down into the water column 80 to 100 feet into the water column at times.
Speaking of 80 to 100 feet, permit, yellowtail, mangrove snappers, how far out you got to go?
The permit, they're catching them in as close as about 5 miles, but they are catching them out as far as 30 miles on some of the wrecks out there. And then for the yellowtail snapper, most of it's been in that 20 to 30 mile range, you know, 75 to 90 feet of water. Same way with the mangrove snapper. They've been getting mangroves and yellowtails up to like 3.5-4 pounds out at some of those spots. The yellowtail, the main thing is chum heavily. You know, that's what brings them in. The mangrove snapper, usually just dropping down your baits right on the bottom, is sufficient.
Live shrimp is really good for them, as
yep.
well as any kind of squid or whatever.
Yep.
Trick is smaller hook, and you'll catch more.
Yeah.
Guys are out there with 6-aught hooks, and they're wondering why they're getting their bait stolen. Switch down to 1-aught, 2-aught, or 3-aught, and watch your hookup ratio go through the roof.
Oh, yeah.
Whether it's yellowtail, mangrove snappers, whatever it is, smaller hook, you'll catch a lot more fish.
Yeah, you'll be pleasantly surprised with how much better it works.
Yeah, it's been a world of absolutes. I hate this, I hate that. This is the only answer to that. That's the only answer to this. Most everything. It's like me. I'm part good guy, part bad guy.
Right.
Sometimes I'm a great radio show host. Other times I'm boring and monotonous. Not everything is one thing. Most things are a mixture of things.
Right.
Now, let's see. Red tide. Boca Grande Pass has been hitting a lot of red tide lately.
Yeah. It's been in and out of there. And it's not giant blooms of it, but it's just enough to screw it up. You know, you go there today, it's fine. Go there 4 hours later, it's coming back through in little patches. And there's been some die-off of a lot of small fish.
And even some nice snook have been killed.
Well, yeah, it got into the bayou last week and enclosed both sides. But overall, I think it was slow enough progression that a lot of those fish boogied out of there because mostly what you're most part seeing both fresh and older dead is small mangrove snapper. A lot of the little sand eels or whatever they are that inhabit the shallower waters, pinfish, lots of little white bait and stuff like that. A few snook, a few redfish, and a few trout.
That I don't think we have much of an eel population because it's hard to get Kobe to go after eel lures anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're used to feeding on eels, they hit eel lures really well.
Right.
And the cobia here over the last few years have not been hitting stuff that looks like eels.
Right.
It might be an instinctual bite, but they're not actively feeding on them. And then we get this red tide, and there's little dead eels all over the place.
Right. But half of those are they're almost like a night crawler, more or less. They live most of their life in a little burrow underground. They're not out free swimming the way the American eel is or the brown eel is.
Okay.
They actually have little... They're basically a tube worm.
All right. Yeah. Well, we're out of time here, boys and girls.
Yes, we are.
So music is going to be playing. And give things a second try and a second thought. If you go to some place and the fishing's really horrible, go back, give it a try again. If it's really good, obviously go back. Sometimes those medium ones are the hard ones to figure out. But no matter what it is, the truth isn't on all the way on the right or all the way on the left. 99% of the time, it's in the middle somewhere. And Fish and Frank here, Robert in the chair across from me, RJ in command and control. The new Fish and Frank's at 4200 Tamiami Trail in Port Charlotte, 33952 Fish and Frank's. Yeah.